You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the very first episode of Trekka Film's new show, being broadcast from the mouth of the wormhole, The Orb. I'm Christopher Jones, and of course I'm the publisher of Trekka Film, but I'm also here to admit that I'm a Niner. Yes, that's right, my favorite Star Trek series of the ball is Deep Space Nine, and that's why I'm teaming up with Trekka Film's Matthew Rushing to bring you the fine details of DS9 each week. And Matthew, why don't you introduce yourself and tell everyone why you've hopped on the Yangtze Kiang with me for this journey?
Well, one was because the Runabout has to be one of the greatest creations in Star Trek history. Now we don't just destroy shuttlecraft that obviously cost nothing, but we destroy runabouts. And we do it with great flair, and you know, we name them after really cool rivers, and you know all over the world, all over Earth, and so yeah, that's really why I'm here, because I like to destroy shuttlecraft. And
it's just about the runabouts. You're here,
yeah, just,
because you love runabouts.
Yeah, I do. I really love runabouts. But no, honestly, I'm here because, like you, I'm a huge Niner. I really enjoy Deep Space Nine. It is my favorite series. There's just something about this show that captivated me from the moment that it started, and I've always really appreciated it. And it's one of those shows that hasn't gotten, I think, the appreciation that it really should.
Yeah, definitely so. You know, a lot of our listeners, people tuning into this first episode of The Orb, of course, know me from the Ready Room every week, and you've been on the Ready Room a few times as well. And we rotate through the series. You know, we start with TOS, and then we go TNG DS9. We go all the way through, and sometimes we throw in a movie or some other special episode. So it really takes, in the best case scenario, 5 weeks, and sometimes 6 weeks for us to get back around to DS9. And even then, we pick an episode and we talk about it, and I just felt like I can't really explore this great show in the kind of depth that I want to. And so that's why you and I talked, and we said, you know, what we really need is we need a DS9 show. So like our sister show, To the Journey, which is about Voyager, the show's going to follow the same format. We're not going to review episodes. We're not going to go through each week of Deep Space Nine. We're going to pick topics about Deep Space Nine that we want to talk about, whether it's a character, whether it's a plot line, whether it's the Bajoran religion, whatever we want to talk about. And we're just going to explore that every week for about half an hour.
And I think that, you know, even if Deep Space Nine is not your favorite series, I think that anybody who's seen enough of it can realize this is the show of all the Star Trek shows that really can benefit from being able to be dissected. There is so much going on in each episode, and then as a whole, there's so much going on. And so this is the show that decided that it was okay to do serialized television. And honestly, many of the shows that are beloved now, such as Battlestar Galactica, Lost, those kind of shows, they really owe their genesis to Deep Space Nine and this kind of storytelling that Deep Space Nine really kind of pushed to the forefront. I think that this is the perfect opportunity to really dive into something that is big, it's massive, it's expansive, and something that Star Trek had never done before. And I think in the end became, to me, is the crown jewel of Star Trek.
I totally agree. You know, I grew up with TOS, and I was finishing high school when The Next Generation came around, so I watched all that in first run. And despite all that, for the reasons that you say, this became my favorite series. It's the series now that when I sit down and watch an episode, I just get sucked in by the depth of the storytelling and the incredible performances by the cast and the messages that are there, and how, for me, they relate more so to the real world. And I can identify with those in a way that I don't necessarily identify when I watch some of the other series, although I love them all. But well, why don't we kick off this first show here and talk, Matthew, about our first impressions of DS9. Now, do you remember when DS9 was being developed and when it launched? Do you remember any thoughts you may have had at the time?
I do remember when they decided that they were going to do another show. And, you know, TNG was going strong. It had really hit its stride. And they decided, you know, look, we're going to strike while the iron's hot. But they decided, look, this time we cannot do the same type of show where it's just another ship going off, you know, into the great unknown and trying to discover, boldly going. And they decided really what we're going to do is we'll take our inspiration from another old Western, The Rifleman, and we will create the place where everybody comes to us. And so we don't go out. People come to us, and we really get a chance to really explore 24th century life from this point of view by being able to see what happens when everybody comes together. And I thought that that was something that was just really interesting. And so when I first heard about Deep Space Nine, I thought, well, this is great because, you know, I'll get the exploration with and just kind of boldly going with the Enterprise. But this will give me a chance to see just kind of the nitty gritty of what life is going to be like in this century.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, in The Rifleman, you have father and son going to live in this Wild West town. And that's exactly what we get from the very beginning with Sisko and with Jake. And the setup is great in that sense. And also the analogy of the Wild West and kind of the unknown, putting the station at the mouth of this wormhole. And you know, Bashir, he goes on about how this is the wilderness and the frontier, and ticks off Kira in the process.
Exactly.
at the beginning, but he's right. I mean, it's, of course, to the Bajorans, it's home, but to us as the viewers, it is kind of a new frontier place. And you mentioned nitty gritty as well. And that's an interesting thing to me because I remember all the buildup during the development of Deep Space Nine and how in the media they talked so much about this being a darker Star Trek. And it is true that it's darker, although it's not necessarily darker in the beginning. It's darker in the later seasons when we get into the war. But it wasn't so much that it was a dark take on Star Trek as much as it was a real take on Star Trek. I think they, you know, they did take, by putting it on a station where instead of our heroes going out and searching for things, everything's coming to them. They have really set up camp in this one location. And I think what that did, and one reason I love Deep Space Nine, is that it gave the writers the ability to build these relationships between the characters more. The focus could definitely be on that station as a community. Whereas, let's say on the Enterprise, of course, off camera, the ship can be like a community. But for us watching the show, all the focus has to be on which planet they're going to this week.
Exactly.
And this allowed them to do the amazing thing of having about 20 or so recurring characters on Deep Space Nine who all got bigger parts than some of the lead characters on other shows. It's astounding.
It also gave them the opportunity, I think, to put to test the philosophy of Star Trek.
Yes.
And that 24th century philosophy. You know, we'd heard a lot about this from TNG. And kind of seen a little bit of what it was like, at least from Starfleet's point of view. But what does this look like when you're faced with living with people who don't believe the same things that you do and have the same values? So the Ferengi, the Bajorans, the Dominion, you know, you name it, they have to deal with these aliens. And so what made Deep Space Nine great is it's not only in this kind of like frontier, but it's also this intersection point where almost, I don't know, it came to mind the idea of the Bermuda Triangle. Well, everything comes together and everything converges. And so putting all that together, I think was really interesting to watch as the show moves forward, is to watch it kind of challenge the ideas of Roddenberry's philosophy and to see sometimes how it doesn't quite always work the way that we might want it to.
Yeah, it is in a way a reaction, I think, to that philosophy that was established on the original series and was really refined on TNG to the point where it's a wonderful future to aspire to, what we see of the Enterprise crew on The Next Generation, the cooperation, the idea that everyone in the Federation seems to get along perfectly, which we know life can't work that way. And it's a wonderful thing to aspire to. But what they were able to do on DS9 was to, like you said, question that and say, okay, is this really how it works? What happens when the crew is an all Starfleet? What happens when people truly do have to work together when they come from different backgrounds? And I think it's an important way to explore ideas in the world today, where our world is becoming so much smaller and it's more important than ever that we work together, people from different countries, different cultures. You know, we see now so many people are of mixed races and mixed nationalities. We're kind of moving towards that Star Trek future. And as much fun as it is to live in that future idealism, it's also really fun to explore how you get from the problems we have today to where Roddenberry took us. And I think a good example of that too is like looking at something like Past Tense from DS9, when they go back to the Bell Riots, you know, exploring exploring that road. I'm trying really hard not to quote the Enterprise theme song here. But
well, yes, it has been a long road, but I think as you look, as you were talking, I was thinking the idea that, you know, when you look at Enterprise, it does kind of funnel really well into the original series and what you see there. And that those kind of, there's still some prejudices that humans have, even in TOS. You know, Bones is probably one of the most prejudiced characters out there. And yet he still is very accepting at the same time. So it's a nice dichotomy. But then you move, I think, and if you move from TOS to Deep Space Nine, I think you see a much better progression to see how humanity can grow, because you do have the mixture of the Starfleet crew that's much more kind of upright and righteous in their actions, kind of morally sound most of the time, and yet being challenged by a universe that is very morally ambiguous. And how does then Starfleet and this kind of utopian society deal with that on a day-to-day basis? And I think this is one of the things that it was so great about Deep Space Nine. This is a really deep and important issue, like you said, for today, and how we deal with these issues. And the show, I think, is still, for me, rewatching it right now with my girlfriend, is still teaching us today. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so good.
Well, that's another topic that I wanted to touch on here as we introduce the concept of the orb to people. How do you feel Deep Space Nine has aged? It blows my mind because I remember the premiere of Emissary. I was in university, and I remember the lead up to it, and anticipating watching this over the holidays. It premiered on January 3rd of 1993. It's been 20 years.
I can't believe it. It makes me feel so old.
It's hard to believe. And I managed to pry the television away from my roommate, Sasha, to watch this because he was always watching MacGyver and Quantum Leap. It was kind of funny. He was from Russia. He was an exchange student that year. And for those who don't know from listening to other Trek FM shows, my background is in Russian. And so he was my roommate, and he was so hooked on MacGyver. But I'm glad he was hooked on Quantum Leap, because then when Scott Bakula came around to be Captain Archer on Enterprise,
exactly,
it was like, oh yeah, I've seen every episode of Quantum Leap. This is great. But bringing it back to Emissary, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years. But, you know, I've watched Emissary probably 4 times over the past 6 months, because we did it on the Ready Room. And the way that that episode connects with me now, it's amazing. It was like completely relevant to my life this year. Yet it was written 20 years ago. And then the other day I was watching In the Hands of the Prophets. And again, written 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago. And I thought, you know, that story, what's going on between Vedic Wynn and Keiko O'Brien in that story, it's exactly the debate that's going on in the United States, especially in the South today.
Yeah.
It's so relevant. So, but like you said, you're watching it with your girlfriend right now. How do you feel the show has aged over the years?
I think that this is the strength of the show and why, personally, I respond to it so well. But to answer the question why I think it has aged so well, Deep Space Nine, first and foremost, from the moment that Emissary starts, is about character. It's about the characters. So the story that they introduce us to is Sisko, the character who has been deeply affected by what happened at Wolf 359. And you're immediately thrust into somebody who is moody and hurt and has deep emotional wounds and is a single father trying to raise his child in this universe that is very dangerous. And he's seen the worst of it. And it's all about character. And because the storylines continue to be about character from episode Emissary all the way to What You Leave Behind, what Deep Space Nine leaves behind for us is amazing character study of at least 20 different characters, like you were mentioning earlier. And that's why you can pop in any of these and they're still relevant today. Because when we're telling stories about character, we're telling stories about ourselves. And when you're telling stories about science fiction, a lot of times you're just telling a fun story. And I think that's why, for me, Deep Space Nine resonates so well. It's the reason that I can pour myself into certain books over and over again. I can read Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or those kind of books over and over again, because it's not only about epic storytelling, but it's about epic character stories. And I fall in love with the characters, but I also relate to them. I think stress that enough, that that's what sets Deep Space Nine apart from every other Star Trek, is that they care about their characters. And honestly, even production-wise, the thing that I like most about Deep Space Nine is that I'm not pulled out of the story by the production. If I watch TNG now, I immediately am pulled out because the bridge looks like I'm waiting in a doctor's office from the 80s. You know, but when I go to Deep Space Nine, it's alien, and it always looks alien, and it never looks like a specific time period, really. And so that's one of the things that I really enjoy about watching this show, because I could kind of get pulled in to even just the production value of the show, because I'm not thinking, well, man, this just looks so dated now. There are still things that look dated in the show, obviously, but I think that's one of its strengths as well.
Yeah, it's an excellent point about characters. You know, I'm a big fan of science fiction literature, real, you know, classic SF. But, you know, there are those stories that you read, especially some Asimov, some Clark, some of that stuff, that it was wonderful when you read it 20 or 30 years ago. But as time goes by, because of some of the scientific focus of it or some of the technological focus of it, it starts to be a little bit harder for you to read, because as our technology advances, those stories age and age more and more. And they do kind of, a disconnect begins and you are pulled out of the story. Whereas, you know, one thing, and of course it's Star Trek, so there's going to be technobabble, but I do feel like, especially after the first season of Deep Space Nine, this show minimizes technobabble compared to the other series. Whereas, of course, Voyager maximizes technobabble to the point where you're like, sometimes just shut up already, you know, Harry Kim, because it's just too much technobabble. But because on DS9, although the technobabble, of course, still exists because it's Star Trek and you have the Federation and the Starfleet technology, it all character development and the heart of the story always takes precedent over those technical aspects. So they don't pull you out, and you can watch this stuff 20 years later and just focus on the storytelling in most of the episodes. I mean, of course, there are some that don't work, but overall, it lives on very, very well.
I think one of the things that, in what you're saying is that in the end, on Deep Space Nine, the technobabble is used to serve a character story. Yeah. And not just a rip-roaring adventure that we're hoping will be fun. So we're going to throw some technobabble at you, and that'll create the story. The technobabble here on Deep Space Nine is almost always used to serve telling a character story.
That's right. And you saw the reaction to this taking a step further for Ronald D. Moore in Battlestar Galactica, where they went so far away from having worked on Star Trek, getting away from technical babble, that they actually have regular telephones and
with cords,
right? Yeah,
it's and just, papers with corners,
and papers with corners. Boy, wouldn't you have loved to work in set design and have to cut those corners off?
No kidding,
everything on that show, that'd be great. So the other thing you talk about here, like for me, TNG, the bridge of the Enterprise D and all, it doesn't really pull me out of the story. That's the next generation for me. And it does look like the lobby of a hotel, but it works fine for me because that's Picard's ship, you know, that all works well. But I will say that the set design of Deep Space Nine is unlike anything in Star Trek. The shades and the textures and the nuance and just the attention to detail that is in this series, I think it does help it stand the test of time, what we're talking about here, because it feels real. And the most amazing thing to me is that if we think it feels real right now, wait until they remaster this on Blu-ray and we can really, really see in detail everything on the promenade, everything in ops, even Sisko's quarters. It's truly going to feel like we are really on the space station, I think, in a way that you can't really associate with being on a starship, but this will be like a real place.
I think next to Enterprise, this is going to be the show that looks the best on Blu-ray. Yeah. And the reason is because you notice the lighting. One of the things that they did almost exclusively in Deep Space Nine was that they wanted every single set to actually have a ceiling. But then they had to figure out how to light that. And so a lot of the lighting has this kind of graded lighting. So you get these shadows and you get this kind of like broken up feeling, and it always feels a little bit alien. But what it does is it adds a lot of depth to so many of these scenes. And again, it's going to make the Blu-ray look fantastic. And I am a little bit disappointed that Enterprise will be coming out before on Blu-ray. I do understand why. It makes so much sense. And as they said, you know, going back to remastered D Deep Space Nine is going to take the same amount of work that they're doing for TNG. Goodness. And so I cannot wait because this really will look fantastic. I mean, going into Quark's bar and Blu-ray, I can't wait.
It's going to be amazing. But yeah, this is going to be a real bear for them to take on remastering DS9. And I don't know how, you know, Greg and I have talked about this on the Ready Room a bit. I don't know how they're going to handle some of the battle scenes in the later seasons because there are so many ships involved in those battles. I think they're almost going to have to go back and just recreate it all from scratch using CGI, but match everything exactly as it was originally, mm-hmm. which is going to take a lot of work. You know, don't do anything fancy. Don't try to put new angles and all that stuff in there. Just give us what we got the first time. But in it's HD. So complex, I don't know how they would do it other than starting over from scratch on some of that CGI stuff. Because at the time, if you remember, that was unprecedented for television, those battle scenes on Deep Space Nine.
Well, we just watched, my girlfriend and I, the beginning of Season 7, and, you know, Worf goes off on the mission to get Jensia and the Stovacore, and they're going to destroy that shipyard. And that whole CGI scene with the sun, and they're pulling out the sunspot there so that it'll destroy the station and everything, you know, that was huge set piece CGI-wise. It definitely will have to be redone. It's up to not up to today's standards. But then it was incredible. So I would love to see that remade with today's CGI, just with the detail that we would need for Blu-ray, because it's going to look amazing. And they don't need to change it because all the angles and everything still work perfectly. It just obviously needs to be upgraded.
Yeah, it just needs to be upgraded. And I know they sometimes up-res this stuff, and I know they've done it with some series. I think Firefly, I think Battlestar Galactica, maybe some as well. And the results have been pretty good, but I would like to see them go in and just put all the attention to detail into a remastering that they put into making this show originally. And I think we're going to get this because, forget the Blu-rays, just syndication rights. And I know people in the States don't always think about international angles, but, you know, here in Japan, we get all these Star Trek series syndicated on television here. And we don't show SD programming in Japan. We haven't for years. And right now, of course, with Star Trek, they do show it in SD because that's all they have. But they show Enterprise in HD, and they show TOS in HD, and of course now TNG coming on in HD, both internationally and in the US. You know, networks are going to be demanding HD content, or they're not going to show stuff very, very soon. And so all the Star Trek series are going to have to be remastered. So I know there's some concern, like maybe they're not going to do DS9, maybe they're not going to do Voyager, but I think they are, and I'm just so looking forward to that.
I mean, and they'll definitely, I think, do it. Obviously, working on TNG right now, that has to be the focus. And so I don't think I'm too worried that it wouldn't come out. I just can't wait for it to come out. So
can't wait for it too.
Well, one of the things that we kind of wanted to talk about just a little bit is just some of our favorite things about the show. So what for you, Chris, you know, as you watched through this series multiple times, what have just been some of the things that you always enjoyed?
Well, I have to say my very favorite thing about Deep Space Nine is the fact that it treats life in shades of gray. And, you know, life isn't black and white, and we can't always charge in, solve a problem, save the day, and ride off into the sunset like happens on the earlier series. And this examination of the realities of life and the fact that when you do something in life, there are consequences, that is probably my single favorite thing about Deep Space Nine.
I think for me, when I watch through Deep Space Nine over and over again, I'm always struck by the fact that they finally were not afraid to touch a whole different side of life that they had never shown in another Star Trek series, and that was religion. And very often you see in a sci-fi show religion as being something that's kind of mocked, or originally in TOS, Kirk is always trying to show somebody the falseness of their god that they're worshiping, and it always is a false god. It's a big computer, or it's another big computer behind a wall because the sky can be touched. Deep Space Nine, on the other hand, showed us that not only is religion still valid in the 24th century, but it may just be true. And I loved the ambiguity with the prophets. Are they wormhole aliens? Are they prophets? Well, I mean, you take a species that lives completely out of space and time, and therefore exists in all time. I don't know, but for me, I really enjoyed that they were willing to explore that and do it so honestly. And especially in the character of Kira and watching her faith journey, I thought was very, very interesting. And so, my girlfriend has just been watching this for the first time all the way through. And for her, Kira is the most changed character throughout the series, and the one that she finds to be the person they spend the most time on, actually. And so watching her develop from being somebody who's so angry and bitter to being somebody who, goes on to help save the Cardassian people in the same way that she saved her people. Those kind of developments just make this show a complete standout in every sense of the word.
Yeah, the exploration of religion for me as well is the other thing about the show that I really like. Now, of course, I think our discussions on the Orb are going to be very interesting because you and I approach the topic of religion from completely opposite sides. But whether you believe in gods or you don't, it's a reality of life. And I think ultimately it's a matter of perspective for each person. And like you said, in TOS, there was an effort made to point out that any belief in a god was a failing on the part of those societies. And Kirk would come in and show that, no, it's not a god. It's false. It's a machine. But here, especially because they had Bajorans and they had Starfleet personnel, and then they had other people like Quark. I mean, Quark didn't believe that the wormhole aliens were any kind of gods or prophets. So, but they were able, because they had these different factions, to show real-life perspectives. Of course, Kira, the rest of the Bajorans, Wynn, although, as we find out, Wynn is, I think, probably not a true believer of the prophets, but we'll talk about that on another show. But then you've got people like Miles, who says, "I don't believe in your gods," he tells Kira at one point early on. And they're able to have that discussion. And I think it's important, because I think that the previous approach of Star Trek of saying that there is no god, there are no gods, religion is not valid, that's not real life. And that is completely pushing one agenda. And what I like in television and literature is to present a point and let the reader or let the viewer make up their own mind what they actually believe. And that's what Deep Space Nine is able to do, and what they set up with the Bajoran religion is you can explore spirituality, you can explore the concepts of religion, you can talk about it from different sides. And at the end of the day, it's still up to the viewer to decide,
yeah,
who were these wormhole aliens in the first place? Were they just aliens? Were they prophets? Were they gods? It's still up to the viewer to decide. So I think they very successfully tackled what had been a very touchy issue in Star Trek, and they handled it in a way that did not feel to me to be any heavy-handed preaching either way, because they always countered one argument.
Exactly.
They countered an argument from one side with an argument from the other side.
Well, and one of the neat things, too, is that I think this is one of the best representations of the word tolerance. And Deep Space Nine shows what true tolerance is towards another person's beliefs. It's not just me saying, well, you can believe what you want to believe and I'll believe what I want to believe. But Deep Space Nine actually has a conversation about it together. And also does not make fun of people for believing something that you might find to be rather silly. Nobody makes fun of Quark for believing in the Divine Treasury. No one.
Right.
I mean, we might laugh at it because they present it comically.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Quark takes his religion just as seriously as Kira takes hers, or that Worf takes his as a Klingon. And so none of these things are seen as anything that we laugh at. They're seen as something that we respect, because we respect the person who believes them. And I think one of the neatest things in watching the show again is seeing Kira. Kira never does anything to convert anybody to her religion. But I think that her actions as a believer in that religion help convert other people to it, and that they become much more comfortable, as Dax does in the last episode that Gen Z is on. She goes into the temple to pray to the prophets. She would never have done this before without Kira. But she goes in there and says, look, I don't know if you're aliens. I don't know if you're prophets. I don't know what you are. But I do know that there's something about you, and I just want to thank you. You know, so that kind of interaction, I think, really makes this show stand apart again. And I really appreciate that. You know, me being a person of faith, I do. I appreciate being presented as if I'm not a crazy fanatic or I'm not a weirdo or any of those kind of things. And so this really sets Deep Space Nine apart and just makes it a wonderful, well-rounded show that I think has something for everyone. If people had, I think then and now, just watch it, because you will not be disappointed.
No, you won't. And you can watch it over and over and over, and you can take new things from it, you know,
exactly.
Every time, which is fantastic. Well, I think these are some of the ideas and some of the topics that we're going to talk about on this show each week. So I hope you'll all climb aboard the Yangtze Kiang with us here and take this journey with us through Deep Space Nine. And of course, let us know if you have certain topics, if you have certain characters, certain themes that you want to hear us talk about. You know, let us know. We want to know what you would like to hear about as well. Like I said at the beginning, this is not an episode review show. We're not going to be starting with Emissary and going through the series. We are going to be jumping around. We'll probably be talking about multiple episodes on each show as we talk about specific characters and specific elements of the show. So we hope that you will enjoy examining Deep Space Nine along with us. So Matthew, any closing thoughts on Deep Space Nine before we wrap up our introduction show here?
Not too much. I think that more than anything, if you're just listening to this show, it's the first time that you're listening to a Deep Space Nine show, and it's not been something that you've really gotten into, but you thought, oh, I'll give this new show on Trek FM a try. I encourage you, go out, just watch on Netflix Deep Space Nine. Get into it. Like all Star Trek shows, the first two seasons do have some struggles, but I think that it's well worth it, because by the time you get from Emissary all the way to the end, you can see the kind of the story thread throughout, and you will not be disappointed. And so we hope to have you with us on this show as we continue to talk about these themes. And I know you are, as I am, very excited to be doing so.
Oh, absolutely. I had to talk more about Deep Space Nine. You know, doing it once every 5 or 6 weeks is just not enough for me. So this was absolute must. Yeah, you're right. You know, Emissary is a fantastic pilot. It's possibly the best of the Star Trek pilots from a storytelling standpoint. And after that, there are some rough episodes in the first season of Deep Space Nine. There are a lot of TNG filling episodes. There's appearance by Q. There's a few things like that. But do stick with it. You know, push through that first season. It starts picking up. Second season has some excellent stories in it as well. And then the show just really takes off and becomes one of the greatest pieces of storytelling ever on television, as far as I'm concerned. So you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, I just have to say, if wishes were horses, everybody would be watching Deep Space Nine.
They would. And everyone would have little short guys running around the corners trying to steal their firstborn.
Rumpled Stiltskin.
You'll never guess my name. I actually kind of like that episode, though.
I do, too. It's one of the few episodes there that when we were trying, my sister and I, we really got into Deep Space Nine. We had missed a few when it first started, and we wanted that one taped. And it was always Wishes with Horses that we would always miss. So I have a really fond memories of that episode when we finally got to see it.
It is a fun one, though. And Sisko gets his baseball in that episode, which becomes a very important element to later stories on Deep Space Nine. So
exactly.
Well, Matthew, before we let everyone go here today, let's tell people where they can find us if they want to drop us a line, let us know some of the things they'd like to hear us talk about regarding DS9. Go to trek.fm/contact, and there's a form there. You can send a message to a show, choose the orb. That'll come to Matthew and myself. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And probably the best place to communicate with us is on Twitter. Our username is trekfm. And we actually have 4 people who tweet from that account. There's myself, there's Greg, Charlene, and Landrew. So we're kind of spread out, you know, in different time zones. So you can hit us up there and chat with us and let us know what you think. Talk to us about Deep Space Nine. And, of course, you can talk to us personally as well. Matthew, if people want to find you on Twitter and hit you up about DS9, where should they go?
Yes, definitely do. I am there on the Twitter at MattRushing02, so just real simple. And, of course, talking about Deep Space Nine and Star Trek and so many other things. So definitely give me a follow. We'll talk about Star Trek's best series.
And if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter under username C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. So give me a follow as well. Send me an at reply and chat me up about DS9 or Star Trek in general. I love to have conversations on Twitter, so do say hello if you follow. And I guess that's about it for this first episode of The Orb, Matthew. So let's let everyone get back to the station. I'm pretty sure it's time to change duty shifts and go have a drink at Quark's.
Sounds good. And Chris, I'm pretty excited because I'm pretty sure the best is yet to come.